financial discipline never goes out of style, right? And you read stuff where it's like, it's all about growth, right? There's no balance. You know, forget the rule of 40, which is the trade-off between profit and growth.
Welcome to Modern Business Operations, where we talk with leaders about how ops is adapting to our modern world.
Hello, everyone. Welcome to another episode of Modern Business Operations. My name is Sagi. I'm the CEO and founder of Tonkin. And today, I have the pleasure of hosting Ben Murray. Hey, Ben. Good to see you.
Hey, great to be here. Thanks for having me on.
Well, thanks for joining. Well, Ben is the SaaS CFO, and I want to hear all about that. But, you know, coming from a corporate life and a lot of, you know, different turns, you founded the SaaS CFO, a media consulting company. I want to maybe start there, you know, maybe tell the audience a little bit about yourself and the journey.
Yeah, sounds good. So kind of, yeah, really quick summary. I've worked in basically two industries in my career. One is the airline industry. You know, so I got started out in FP&A or financial planning analysis after getting my MBA. I actually did a short stint as a mainframe programmer pre-MBA, then rose through the ranks of FP&A in the airline industry, then got into software in the early 2000s, kind of back in the on-premise days, Salesforce getting started, became SaaS CFO for founder and PE-backed companies. And then about 4 years now doing my own thing. So Fractional CFO Services, helping a lot of SaaS founders with their finances, coaching, have an academy where I teach SaaS metrics finance, a couple newsletters and podcasts. So firmly implanted in the tech world and B2B SaaS world.
Nice. Well, that gives you a very good outlook also into kind of like where the industry is. Obviously being working with several different companies. Well, that's exciting. I think, you know, one of the things I was excited about, you know, talking with you as well, I think everyone, maybe kind of like the topic of the hour, if you will, everyone talking agents, and you wrote recently about that too. What's your take here? Is that a hype? Is that under hype, over hype? What's your take?
Yeah, you can't scroll through LinkedIn without seeing an AI post, and I'm guilty of that too. You know, also co-founded an app that's using some agentic AI for cash collections. And yeah, it's a big thing now, obviously, and I just presented at the SaaS Metrics Summit in New York City, and part of my conversation was just the evolving software business model. If you think back in the day, like mainframe software to then client server and on-premise, and then ASP models where it's subscription, but it's still hosted on-prem, and then true SaaS architecture. Now, you know, this next wave of AI and AI first companies, agentic AI, and just how interesting how some of these incumbents couldn't adjust, you know, back the on-premise to cloud switch. You know, and I think we're in that same phase now where you think these big software incumbents are a SaaS, and now who are facing these AI first company threats where we think, hey, no big deal, we're doing great, we're big. But that happened to a lot of companies before, you know, in those same positions. So I think it's one of those conversations that software leaders should be having right now is, you know, how can we evolve, because it's going to be a big threat.
So, you know, maybe double clicking on some of it, you know, I think maybe not everyone fully understand the role of a CFO. I think, you know, most people think about it, hey, well, it's finance, right? So it's probably like the accounting and stuff, which is part of it, right? It's part of the responsibility. But, you know, the way I think, especially for startups, but I think all the way to, you know, big corporations, there's a lot of strategy and, you know, consulting that comes with it, as, you know, from a business strategy and investment and so on. Being in that role, especially when you work with multiple of them, you kind of mentioned about some companies are not making the change. Maybe let's talk about that. I think first, maybe from the eyes of a CFO to leverage this technology. Are you excited about this? Do you think it's worth the excitement? Like, there was a lot of waves. You just mentioned a few of them through the automation space and when you work in big airlines. What is your take on that?
Yeah, the CFO role, when coming from the airline industry, very operational. So that was just part of the finance nature, is finance is so embedded in the airlines because it's so capital intensive, hard industry. Then coming to software, same thing. And we know, and it's easier said than done. Like, you know, FP&A CFOs want to be business partners, help those operations. But that's where, you know, true CFOs really prove their value, is I can't do my job as a finance leader without understanding the operations of the business. What are we trying to do in the business? What's the product doing? How are leaders managing the business? So it's pairing up that, yeah, of course, we're closing the books, doing all the accounting data, but then we're trying to facilitate better decisions, invest in the business. It's not just about no, right? CF knows, but you know, we want to help those business leaders operate. So a lot going on there where CFOs have to be in the business of others. And then also, you know, alluding like even just the back office, me as a CFO, it's like, yeah, I've got to lever tech, you know, to scale my back office function. And it's just part of the process. Plus it's getting just so complex now. There's so many solutions out there. And before it's just, hey, some accounting software, maybe we invoice our customers. And now like CFOs are surrounded probably by 10 to 15 applications just to run their back office.
One of the things I've started to see, I'm curious your thoughts, is this idea that maybe since the 2021 type of like changes to the market, maybe it was always that, but definitely now with AI stuff, who is the driving force to look at AI and look at those new tech, right? It seems like in previous iterations, like the cloud, it was somewhere between the CIO and, you know, sometimes, you know, around kind of like delivery or even like some finance. It feels like now with AI, a lot of things come directly from the board. At least that's what I'm hearing, right? Directly from the board, the CEO, sometimes the CFO, where they're like, wait, why would you hire more people if you try this AI thing? What do you think about that? Do you see that too?
Yeah, I think the driving decision, I interview SaaS founders for my podcast where a lot of them are building AI first products. And as they're going to pitch these companies, sometimes huge global enterprise companies where the large companies usually have an AI committee, you know, where they're like driving decisions. How should we adopt this internally? But then, yeah, smaller scale, maybe it's the CTO, CIO. But then also I say, you know, the CFO has to be at the table. Like they need to be the data steward, you know, of how these systems are coming together, the data at play. So I think that's just now the evolving role of the CFO is like still at the table with these, you know, how are we levering AI? Because it's not unlike other business decisions where are we investing in something? What's the ROI? And now I'm hearing from CFOs where it's like, well, you know, should we allocate a certain percentage of our budget to internal AI tools? Well, now the thinking's right. We know there's so many AI tools out there and we should assess that as a business case, just like any other software that we're purchasing. Yeah. You know, can it help us and is there time to value?
Do you think we're there or we're close to, or what's the horizon for, you know, a more of a shift in where people, as they come to fill in roles, they think about AI first as an option? Is that a myth or do you think it's real?
No, I think, and the go-to-market function, definitely you're seeing a ton of AI tools, AI SDR calls. I think I got one last week. You know, it's kind of hard to say, right? That's doing a good job. I was like, well, is this AI? Not sure. And I'd say go-to-market, definitely it's in the process. And we know development is changing, you know, with AI coding tools. I think the back office, finance, accounting, I think it's a little slow despite what the surveys say. And I meet with a lot of SaaS CFOs and we talk, hey, who's adopted a lot of AI? And raise your hand, and no one raises their hand. You know, they're still trying to figure out because we can't, you know, we have to be so precise. You know, if AI drafts that sales, you know, that cold email, it could be drafted a lot of different ways, but I can't, you know, have debits and credits going one way or the other, right? There's a precise way to do that. So I think still in the back office, a little bit slower now in FP&A forecasting, seeing more things. So it's going to slowly go in, but I think still it's not that CFOs don't want to adopt, but we can't have different answers every time we ask AI.
Yeah, absolutely. Maybe zooming out a little bit from AI and talking about just the markets in general. I think you mentioned, you know, you've started the consulting company about 4 years ago.
Yeah.
I think, you know, as a startup CEO myself, and we've been around for almost a decade now, I've lived through some of those changes in the market. I think the biggest one to anyone that listens and experienced it is the fact that, you know, growth in at all costs was the paradigm for a bit. And now a lot more, you know, growth at the right cost type of thing. What is the kind of your like go-to tips and like way of helping startups think about that?
Yeah. And I say, you know, because, right, the headlines change, the popular headlines change, but I always say financial discipline never goes out of style, right? And you read stuff where it's like, you know, it's all about growth, right? There's no balance. You know, forget the rule of 40, which is the trade-off between profit and growth. You know, it's like, let's just go for growth. And obviously it rotated back to a balanced playbook. So it definitely went from growth at all costs to now more of a balanced, you know, expectation as far as like, yeah, we were almost a little bit of the best of both worlds. But, you know, when I help SaaS founders, it's like, one, it's a big difference if you're in a bootstrapped environment where we're self-funding and we have to be very careful, or are you VC-backed, where I think it may rotate, you know, if you get this big Series A, Series B, like, you know, and there's a lot of competition, you know, there's still, I think, that playbook of like, all right, we've got to add ARR now. Like, we've got to do something with this. There's so many competitors where maybe we'll grow inefficiently, but we've got to get that top line number up.
Yeah. And I think this is kind of where it's interesting, quite exciting with this, you know, with where can I find efficiency? Where can I find leverage? Are you focusing in any specific industries, or you've been quite horizontal from that perspective?
I would say I'm pretty vertical right now. In my world is B2B SaaS, and now that's evolving. Maybe there's some AI play in there, you know, as well with the SaaS founders, but, you know, helping SaaS founders with their finances, helping them scale with the right data and metrics. So definitely entrenched in the SaaS world.
This episode is brought to you by Tonkin. Tonkin is the operating system for business operations, providing businesses with the building blocks to orchestrate any process with no code or change management required. Contact us at Tonkin.com to learn how you can build complex processes fast.
Any predictions on B2B? You know, I feel like, I'll give you an example, like there's a lot of noise in, you know, X or whatnot about like startups doing like B2C AI stuff. And some talked about top line metrics, you know, look at Cursor and whatnot. They're not B2C, but like they're B2D, you know, type of thing. And they're like all of a sudden, you know, 100 million ARR in like 6 months or whatnot. B2B, like enterprises are slower. What's your prediction there?
Yeah, I mean, B2C and B2B SaaS are such different worlds. A lot of the same operating and unit economics, but just the trials, the funnels, you know, the price points, retention a little bit different. So I think, you know, and still, I don't think we want to sometimes get caught up in the AI hype where it's like, hey, if I found something, it's got to be AI first. Well, does it make sense that this should be an AI tool? Because still helping a lot of SaaS founders where it's just, you could say not boring, but just it's enterprise B2B SaaS and they're growing great businesses and we'll get great valuations. And does it make sense eventually? All right, would AI help in this process and embed it in the product? So I think we don't want to be, you know, too caught up in the headlines where, yeah, AI first, right? There are the use cases and they're growing super fast, but there's still a lot of founders building, you could say now, traditional B2B SaaS and doing real well, or even, you know, in even B2B stuff or B2C stuff that's not AI infused.
So what advice do you give if a founder comes to you and say, hey, we thinking to, you know, invest more in this area, and, or, you know, more likely the board told them, or like some, you know, advisors told them, like, what are you doing? Like, you should not hire those people anymore. You should go and, you know, use AI instead. Like, what is, like, how do you guys look at it?
Yeah, I think at the scale that I'm helping folks, it's still like early stage, probably not too AI infused of like, hey, let's replace this personnel. Yeah, definitely sales potentially if you have a sales leader and like, all right, we've got, yeah, if you have leaders of your departments, a dev leader, sales leader, CRO, et cetera, then yeah, they should be considering like, all right, should it be people or should it be an AI tool? You know, and then can this be part of our process? And now our org chart's changing, you know, with, you know, agentic AI spots instead of people. And so it's, I think it's got to be considered. And they're, like I said, go to market, definitely a lot of traction there. Still slower in dev, you know, but other departments, maybe customer success, finance, accounting, still a little bit slower. But those conversations should be taking place, you know, to continue to be efficient.
You mentioned something that kind of brought another interesting topic, in my opinion, which is pricing models. There's a lot of interesting, you know, development there. I think Salesforce came out with new pricing for their agents. Then others are trying to kind of find the right way to think about it. Any thoughts or things you've noticed?
So yeah, recent presentation. So I analyzed about 160 public tech company filings. Like, what? How are they defining annual recurring revenue? What are their pricing models? You know, are they like in Salesforce? They don't mention outcome-based pricing, right, in their SEC filings. They'll kind of like traditional usage-based. So we'll see. And but there's more disclosure in AI ARR versus subscription ARR. So I think pricing models are definitely evolving. But the whole outcome base will be interesting. Where yeah, will it be a lever to come in outcome-based pricing and then upsell them to then a subscription-based contract because we want predictability, right? Mm-hmm. You know, and that's the thing with outcome-based. Well, it's like, well, if my bill goes up, that's supposed to be a good thing for me. But then I'm like, oh my gosh, my bill's bigger. I wasn't expecting that. So, you know, could this be, you know, an initiative, a thing where it gets the, you know, you get into a customer and then expand and then get them back to the traditional subscription pricing. So I think maybe sometimes they'll evolve, but maybe it'll come back to subscription again.
Yeah, subscription had the same, like seed-based subscription, you know, had a similar issue, right? Like, you know, people didn't want to pay shelfware, they call it, right? Where like seats for people that, you know, don't need it every month or whatnot. And I think the outcome base, I don't know, it's more of a question. I couldn't fully understand the difference between an outcome base and volume base, right?
Yeah, because it is usage based. It's there's a rate times a volume, and now that the rate or the volume gets triggered by some outcome, so it's kind of rate times an outcome event. So still usage based, still could be unpredictable, you know. And are we running retention on outcome based revenue? And when we look at SaaS P&Ls, right, we've got subscription revenue, we got services, usage, managed services, maybe a hardware play, and yeah, will we have like an outcome based revenue category now, or will it just, you know, just evolve? It'll just be essentially usage-based, like you said, a volume play.
Yeah. Which I think is also going to an interesting take that some people have about those super fast-growing AI startups where all of a sudden they kind of, you know, have 100 million ARR, where in reality, you know, they don't have ARR yet. They like literally exist for 6 months. So it's more of like MRR that is kind of like, you know, obviously doubled by 12. But then the question is, what is the retention rate of this? You know, yeah. What is the, you know, driving force of it?
Yeah. And that's the thing, like people are saying, like, you know, AR is dead or SaaS metrics are broken, but with AI, but maybe this is right, a truly different business model. We're trying to put the SaaS metrics, you know, SaaS framework onto an AI business. And maybe it's different because SaaS companies are valued highly because you have great retention, you have predictable revenue. And if I build, say, an AI company, well, can you expect the same multiples? You know, maybe, yeah, if you're growing from 0 to 100 million in 2 years, sure, like, you know, great valuation. But, you know, if you're an AI company at 5 million and you have no retention patterns and not sure where your revenue is going, you know, maybe the valuation will be less than a traditional SaaS, you know, as, you know, the market gets flooded with AI tools.
Yeah. Yeah. I think there's another kind of like avenue that some people start to take, I don't know if successful or not, where trying to compare it to like a person, like an employee cost, which is also interesting because the employee costs also changed in tech over time, right? It used to be like more hourly or like, you know, so like traditional rates, and then moved a little bit into more like what used to be more of a management type of, you know, salary, so like global salaries, if you will, where you kind of like have unlimited, you know, time off or whatnot, because you kind of like saying, well, you might be working on weekends. I don't like, you know, some weekends, you know, so it's kind of like, I'll pay you extra to be global and not like pay you like 9 to 5 type of thing. It's just fascinating to me how, you know, it's somewhere in between what people, but then at the same time, it can be multiple people by this one AI thing. Very fascinating.
Yeah, and that's where the pricing gets really interesting. It's like, hey, I can do that for a quarter of the cost of a person. Should I price it at a quarter of a cost? Should I price it at a half of a cost? Or maybe it's priced at a full FTE, but I can do the work of 4 people. You know, so I think that'll be interesting, that there'll probably be some pricing power in the beginning. But maybe, again, as new entrants come in, you know, the competition comes in and then lowers that pricing. But yeah, that's exactly the whole thing with agentic AI, is it can take this workflow that people are doing manually, rip that out, put the agent in there, and it handles that from end to end. So it's pretty fascinating.
It's also interesting, you know, when you think about back in your time, the big airlines, right? I don't think most people understand how much companies like that pay for like the mainframe or the ERPs and so on. And it's sometimes completely out of whack, you know, from expectations or like from like the, you know, experience of users and what they perceive as value, because it moves from being like a value add into like an infrastructure. And that entire dynamic, I really think, is a massive opportunity and risk for this wave. If we can't figure it out, people are going to be grossly underpaying for this technology, and which will kill a lot of companies. But at the same time, some companies would make you overpay, which can cause the market perceived ROI to be too low. There's like, we've kind of like seen that in the last 10 years kind of unfold multiple times. Yeah, I think it's going to be interesting.
Well, yeah, you think about, say, airlines spending millions of dollars on, say, infrastructure software, like dispatch software. Like, you can't operate an airline without dispatch software. And when that goes down, you've seen, I think, like Southwest, I don't know, you know, the airlines where it goes down, right? Flights can't take off. And that's infrastructure. Are you going in to sell ROI on that? Maybe not. Like, you're going, there's some component to that, but, you know, it's the backbone, it's the infrastructure. It's got to work every day, you know, every second of the day, where you can, you know, you have that pricing power within, even with infrastructure plays.
Yeah. So what is your like prediction for the next year? Like, if we do this episode again in a year from now, right? Like June 26, would that be a fluke or a hype, or are we going to see like actual changes in behavior?
Yeah, I think so. I mean, right, it's so hard to say at the pace that AI is going, but I think that's where a year from now, yeah, you could see different org charts. You know, say a 200-person company, you know, maybe it's, you know, I don't know, 175, and now you've got agentic AI in boxes that are replacing, you know, doing these workflows. So I think that's coming. It's just hard to predict how fast. You know, but again, that's going to take a lot of work too, because it's like, how does it integrate to systems? Who's overseeing it? You know, what's the quality control? But I think, yeah, we're going to see those org charts even in 12 months shift a bit.
What's the biggest opportunity, you think?
Oh, well, like now it's easy to say, like, yeah, you see it in go-to-market, marketing tools, sales tools, you're going to see that. And, you know, who knows, maybe customer success next. But yeah, I think that's where it's like maybe some companies are doing that now, or maybe you're like, hey, I'm trying to outsource to this tool, but now it's like, okay, this is now firmly in my org, and this is part of my strategy, my department strategy.
Nice. Awesome, man. Well, you know, I like always to ask, you look back through your career, there's, you know, been a lot of changes outside, a lot of changes you did in your career, took some impressive, you know, jump to kind of start your own thing. Congrats for that, by the way. What's the, you know, what's maybe an advice you got early in the career that you feel like is worth paying forward?
Yeah, something that I learned on the job, and I think leaders learn as with more time in the seat, is like with team management, is like, never assume. That saved me so many times. If something comes up with your team, or you think, you know, some, you know, a team member did something and someone's mad, you know, in another department, don't assume, right? Just figure out, you know, what's going on, talk to the person, because it's so easy to assume and jump to conclusions that with your team that you're managing, you know, first figure out the story, you know, and that's, I think, has helped me a lot, you know, with you just building that bond and relationships with your team, you know, just figure out things first, you know, just like before you send off that really hot email or you're mad about the email, just take a second, you know, think about it before you react too quickly. And I think that's really helped me with team management.
I love it a lot. I like to don't assume. I heard something similar of, you know, always like assume good intentions, which is kind of like similar, but from a different angle, but actually don't assume anything is actually a very even cleaner. Mm-hmm. Just don't assume anything. Just, you know, talk.
Yeah.
Maybe, you know, maybe in the age of AI, this would even become even more critical.
Yeah.
Skill for people to control.
Yeah. Yeah, definitely. Who knows? Well, you know, because now, you know, I interview founders who are, you know, AI coaches and AI performance management. So yeah, things are changing.
Yeah. Well, if anyone wants to chat with you or learn more or work with you, where can they find you?
Sure. My, you know, so cliche now, but I started my blog in 2016. That's kind of grown into what I can do today. So that's at thesascfo.com. Or, you know, feel free to reach out, email me at ben@thesascfo.com.
Very cool. Hey, Ben, that was awesome. Thank you so much.
Yeah, thanks, Augie. Yeah, appreciate you having me on.
Absolutely.
I hope you enjoyed this episode of Modern Business Operations. You can see the show notes and all of the resources mentioned on today's episode at tonkin.com/mbopod. Thank you for listening, and be sure to subscribe for updates on future episodes. And if you're interested in staying up to date on the latest in business operations technology, head over to tonkin.com.